Orchids are really stunning flowers, aren't they? They're often so perfect looking that it's hard to believe that they're real sometimes. And we have a world expert on orchids right here in Wisconsin, and he's with me in the studio right now, as a matter of fact. Chuck Aker is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery. It's located in the Wanakee area. He also propagates and sells orchids through his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. He has not only great knowledge to share, but stories that sound like kind of something out of Indiana Jones, Chuck.
Yes, indeed.
Tell you what, we're going to hear about those and certainly look forward to your questions and comments or maybe your experiences with raising orchids. So if you're experienced at it or if you've never done it or would like to know more, please call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. Definitely today you should go to my Facebook page because there are some wonderful photos up of orchids. Aren't there, Chuck?
Everybody's out there showing their wares, and that's great. That's super exciting. Love to see that.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. What defines an orchid from other flowers?
Well, the orchid itself is defined mainly by the flower structure. It's a six-segmented flower, and it can only be divided in half on one particular plane. That would mean like you could look at a dandelion and you could cut that dandelion in half many different ways and
sure.
You'd still have equal halves. An orchid can only be cut in half on one particular plane. And again, the six-segmented flower, you have your petals and your sepals, some of which are modified into a lip, and that's basically what you see in the center of the flower in most cases. And then on slipper orchids, it's the pouch is the modified lip. So that's really what defines an orchid, and they are, you know, also found all over the world. It's the world's largest flowering plant family, with orchids found on every continent in the world except the Antarctica. So it's a very, very large plant family.
Yeah, how many species do we have?
Well, last count, the taxonomists, I believe, were up to between 30 and 35,000 naturally occurring species. It depends upon if you're what they call a lumper or a splitter. Some of the species are kind of lumped together, but they are actually different. So some taxonomists follow the lumping, some follow the splitting. So depending on, you know, where you are with that stand. And then, of course, there's at last count, I believe the Royal Horticultural Society produced in their archives 156,000 registered hybrid orchids that man has made since the archiving of that in the 1700s.
Wow.
So, and that doesn't include all the unregistered hybrids that are out there too, because a lot of people do make hybrids and don't name them or register them with the RHS. So there's just so many plants, so many orchids.
And you were part of an incredible adventure to bring back a sample of a newly discovered rare orchid. You were the first grower in the world to raise one to flower, but getting it here, you were hand carrying it from Peru? Tell us that story. That's Indiana Jones-like.
Yeah, that's quite the endeavor that we went on. In 2002, there was a recently discovered Phragmopedium in the Peruvian jungle that I got wind of through some customers of mine. And of course, the Phragmopedium orchid is my passion. I specialize in hybridizing and growing those myself personally, as well as for our business. So when I got wind of this new discovery, I definitely needed to pursue that, and that led me to a trip to Peru. My wife and I went down in 2003 to actually hike out into the jungles and see where these plants were growing and, you know, just study how they grew and where and get an idea of what they looked like and so on. And we visited several nurseries that were already cultivating the species. However, at that time, we were not able to actually bring them back because of certain export-import laws yet. The plants have to be artificially propagated and grown from seed of collected plants in order to be exported. So in 2005, that finally happened with two certified nurseries in Peru had successfully propagated this species by seed and were offering little young seedlings for sale in the flask. That means in the sterile vitro culture. They were offering those for sale, so I went back down to 2005 to be one of two U.S. nurseries to be the first to import that species and start growing it.
And so that must give you a lot of satisfaction.
It really does. And in 2009, the highlight was that I was the first U.S. grower to actually bring one of those to flower, and I actually exhibited it at Orchid Quest 2009 at the Alliance Center, and the plant won numerous awards and stirred all kinds of interest, and it was really the highlight of that whole endeavor. So,
and I believe we have that up on our Facebook page somewhere, a picture of you with that orchid.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, that's a great photo. I just was so proud that day, and the timing of it couldn't have been better. The flower opened like 1 or 2 days before the event of the show. I didn't plan on having it in our exhibit, but when it opened up and was showing its face nicely, I thought, well, we're going to put it in our exhibit and go for it. And I won so many awards with that at that time, and this is super exciting.
Super exciting. Well, if you have questions, I'm trying to find. Oh, there we go. I finally, is that it right
that
there?
That is, yeah.
There we go. Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very large slipper orchid for its kind. It's really the largest in the Phragmopedium family. The flower spans almost 8 inches across from petal tip to petal tip. And the color of it, there's no other Phragmopedium species that really produces that color. And how something like that can go undiscovered, you know, all these years and until then, it's just amazing. But, you know, there's so many things in the jungles down there, and man has definitely not set foot on all the land on this earth. So we're constantly discovering new species of orchids. They actually discovered a couple of new ones right up on Machu Picchu 2 years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's just really exciting to always hear about the new species being discovered.
Well, and in addition, as we were talking earlier, there are many other photos of orchids now on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show that people are posting.
Some really beautiful stuff. Boy, I'm really impressed. Some of these home growers, hobby growers are, you know, some of these folks have just an amazing collection. And I sometimes just get jealous, too, that they've got plants I don't. And it's like, where did you get
that plant? Well, here's one from Tim. I got this one from a friend who was dividing her orchids. The bloom lasted about 4 months.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And that's a Paphiopedilum slipper orchid, again, mm-hmm. lady slipper variety, tropical in origin. That's the Asian slipper orchid family. Super easy to grow as a house plant. They love our typical home environment. You know, the relatively warm climate from 60 degree minimum to 80 or 90 or whatever it gets mm-hmm. in the day, they don't mind. Like east window where they get the morning sunshine, and they can stay in bloom a long time. And often they have beautiful mottled leaves to them as well. So they have that tessellated leaf, and they make a real good-looking plant when they're not in flower, too. So they're fun to grow.
Kelly in New Berlin has a question for you. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have an orchid, and all of the flowers fell off, like, within a weekend, and I was wondering if there's anything that I could do for that, or if the flowers will come back.
Do you know what type of orchid you have there?
I do not know.
Does it have an ID tag in it at all in the pot?
Probably, but I'm currently not home.
Okay. Well, more than likely, it's one of the common Phalaenopsis orchids, where the leaves real flat and low to the pot, and the flower stem rose above that with round, flat flowers.
The stem was pretty high, and the buds were pretty high up on
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more than likely a Phalaenopsis orchid. If you would go possibly to our website, orchidsgardencenter.com, and just click around on the orchid varieties there, you will find Phalaenopsis culture sheet there and with some pictures of the flower and the plant and so on. If your flowers fell off all at one time like that, it could be that it was just natural, that the flowers are naturally expiring. They bloom usually 2 to 4 months. So sometimes they just all fall off at once. That's not uncommon. If it is truly that type of orchid, I would recommend cutting the stem off way up high, like right below where your first flower was. And again, there's a picture on our care instruction sheet posted on our website where to cut that off. If you cut that off at that point right now, you can encourage that stem to produce a secondary bloom stem, and you may get flowers again in as little as 60 days.
Okay, great.
All right, sounds wonderful. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Kelly. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question or comment about orchids. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Or shoot us a note on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly a photo would be great as well. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. Orchids start out differently from other flowers, don't they? They have to be germinated in a flask?
Yeah, you know, and not a lot of people know that, you know, that the orchid does take a very, very long time to, you know, germinate, grow, and to flower. And orchids do start their life in a sterile environment. The seed is actually sown on a nutrient agar solution inside a flask, as they call it, which is a sterile environment done in a laboratory type situation. And the reason being that orchids are germinated like that is because the orchid seed itself does not have any what they call endosperm around the embryo. Like when you look at a corn or a corn seed or a bean seed or something like that, you've got your big seed there. And way deep inside of that seed is the actual embryo, and around that is actually the endosperm or the food for that embryo to help germinate once it's put into the soil. Well, the orchid seed does not have that. It's what's called a naked embryo, and thus it needs special conditions to actually germinate. And what that nutrient agar solution is just basically nutrients. It's just basically what it is, and it helps the seed to germinate in a sterile environment so the natural fungus and bacteria that we live with every day does not consume the seed. So that's a very, very slow, delicate, and meticulous process. And first of all, to get the seed pod, you have to hand pollinate the flower, and you know that alone is somewhat of a specialized situation and also takes up to sometimes a year for the seed pod to actually develop mature enough to be sent off for germinating at the lab. And then once they're germinated, that's a really delicate and slow process, and it'll take anywhere from 6 months to 2 years in the lab situation, in the flask situation, for the plants to actually become strong enough to be taken out and put into the real world and breathe their first breath of fresh air outside of the flask. And then from that point, it's another 3 to 5 or even 7 years before that orchid is flowering and, you know, marketable. So it really is a very, very long, just a long ordeal. And not a lot of people realize that. And you could pick up orchids, you know, for $10, $15, $20. And you can't realize that there's so much into it up to that point.
Chuck Aker, our guest today with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. He also propagates and sells orchid through his own business. It's called Flasks by Chuck Aker. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking orchids today with Chuck Aker of Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. And join in with your questions and comments. Lynn in DeSoto, Wisconsin, has phoned in, so let's go to Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
I have a black thumb in regard to houseplants.
Okay.
Can you give the basics for what you plant your orchid in, where you put it, how much water it requires,
Sure.
Well, you know, sometimes the blackest thumb does the best with orchids because they actually do thrive more on neglect than they do the actual pampering. So, Lynn, really, all you need to do is go to your local greenhouse, garden center, buy a Phalaenopsis orchid that's potted in a bark-based mix or a sphagnum moss-type mix, and take that thing home and set it in an east window where it gets bright but filtered light. Basically, you just water the darn thing whenever it's dried. Sometimes that's only once a week. Sometimes it's as infrequent as once every 2 weeks. So, you know, really actually a low-maintenance type of care on those. And blooming longevity on Phalaenopsis orchids runs anywhere from usually 2 to 4 months if you purchase one that's just freshly opening. It's really actually probably one of the lowest maintenance indoor plants that you could probably deal with and give you so much value with its blooming longevity. That's what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Temperature-wise, summer, winter, east windows get a lot of sun during the summer and it's a higher heat. What temperature do they like to be at?
Well, your Phalaenopsis orchid typically likes to be at what we like, so anywhere between that 60 and 85 range is always preferable for those. They do tolerate spikes or short periods of time where you can get cooler to, you know, 55 or so, and of course warmer. Our greenhouses, you know, occasionally can get to be 100 degrees in the hot summertime, which doesn't usually bother them. When the temperature is up like that, it is good to keep them out of the sun entirely because you can sunscald them with the higher air temperature when the sun shines on those. But typically the east window in Wisconsin is really one of the best windows to grow a lot of those types of orchids. And you can also summer them outdoors when they're not flowering. Put them in the shade outside. If you have a screen porch or sheltered patio, those are ideal locations for them. So those are all great things.
Hmm.
Well, thank you. And say hi to Karen for us, and maybe we'll see you next trip to Madison.
We'll do. Right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling, Lynn. Appreciate it. Ben in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Oh, hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, Chuck, I just passed your orchid place here in Middleton, but I've been meaning to stop by. I have three cuttings from where I'm from in the tropics, and my father grew some great orchids down there. Some that are 4, 5, 6 feet long, and you know, they grow on trees and
right.
They grow on the paths. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's beautiful to see. But I bought these and brought these back with me, and just went in the backyard, grabbed dirt and some just dried tree bark and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Put them in, and they're going. But they the little hairs are coming out. You know, they have like little tiny hairs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I don't know much about orchids, but. I just want to keep them going because it's sentimental, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away. And the thing is, I was just wondering, I have them in their east light, but the windows are, you know, I have the shade down so that, you know, and then I have this little green kind of greenhouse, you know, that I put them in.
Mm-hmm.
Under plastic, and then they're kind of in the north. And they're going, but a lot of times I put a couple ice cubes in there. Just to give them water.
Okay.
And but I was wondering if I should transplant them or put them in a bigger pot. Right now they're in you know, one of those small containers,
mm-hmm.
kind of things.
Well, the orchid, when it starts out like that, really does like to be fairly crowded in the pot. So, I, you know, it sounds mm-hmm. like it's a fairly freshly planted plant right now. So I would let those roots develop really well in there.
Well,
before
been about
you...
the, yeah, some one, two of them have been in there like for about a year and a half.
Okay.
2 years, and then the other one for about a year.
Okay. Well, you're getting there to that point then if you're up to over a year. So anytime now, this is a great time of the year to do some repotting because the plant is generally actively growing. Our temperatures are warm. We've got some humidity in the air. This is really ideal right now, so don't wait too long. You know, try to get that done. If you're going to do it now.
What would be best, you know, clay pot or...
I don't know exactly what type of orchid you have there, but clay is always recommended. It helps the plant to dry out a little bit between waterings at the root zone there, and also gives it some stability. If it's a taller growing type of orchid, it helps it, you know, stabilize and so on. Use a new clay pot. Don't go in the garage and get something that's been around for a while. Get a brand new pot. They really love the porosity of the new clay. That plant will be very happy in that.
Good luck. Thank you, Ben, for calling. And Patricia and Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have to concur with your guest because I have an orchid, and it is one of the easiest plants to take care of. So,
there you go.
It gives a person so much enjoyment because the blooms last so long.
They really do.
Anyway, I have a Phalaenopsis,
and
I was wondering, I have two questions. One is, when is the best time to fertilize, when it's in bloom or non-blooming?
We recommend to actually fertilize, you know, throughout the year, whether it's flowering or not. The plant still needs the nutrients because the plant is actually, you know, always growing. You know, you're going to always have the chlorophyll there. So fertilizing once or twice a month is great plenty, whether it's flowering or not.
Okay, my other question is, my orchid is one of those three ice cube ones. And, of course, my home temperature varies in the 60s in the winter to the high 70s in the summer. And in the summer, should I give it four ice cubes?
Well, you know, that product isn't one of ours, but typically I see those plants do very well with a fairly consistent regimen of what they're recommending there. Now, if you're seeing that your leaves are getting a little limp or leathery or somewhat flaccid, that means the plant's probably dehydrating a little bit. And at that point, I could say go ahead and give it some more then. But if you feel that the leaves are turgid, things are growing along good and, you know, everything's happy, just continue doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
And Kate in Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Kate.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A friend of mine gave me an orchid that she received from her sister-in-law in Texas, and I'm not familiar with the variety. I do have Phalaenopsis, and they grow beautifully.
Okay.
It almost looks... It's like in a 10-inch wide or 8-inch wide pot. It looks like four bulbs coming out of it.
Okay.
And out of each, it almost looks like mother-in-law, like a, well, like maybe palm or mother-in-law tongue. And I was wondering if you are at all familiar with the variety.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you might have what's called the Cymbidium orchid. Do you get on the internet at all?
I do.
Okay.
You said Cymbidium?
Cymbidium. 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 And they are native to Asia and the Himalayas, and they're commonly known as the king of orchids. If you went to our website, orchidsgardencenter.com, and scrolled into the orchid category and checked on Cymbidium, you may be able to resemble, you know, that particular leaf structure and plant structure.
Sure.
Otherwise, Google, of course, is an awesome tool to, you know, identify a lot of these orchids. The internet's just amazing for the orchid industry. I'm pretty sure that's what you have there. And if you needed cultural information on that, once you decipher that's what you have, our care sheet posted on our website is written specifically by us for growing in the Wisconsin climate. So it's really, you know, targeted for, you know, our climate around here. So you can read on that. And gosh, you know, feel free to give us a call at the greenhouse too if you have further questions.
Well, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling.
That's going to help.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, we finally have some open lines again. We can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Ruth and Nina, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a plant here, and I don't really know what it is. I've had it for 8 years, I'd say. And I keep giving slips away because they love the flower on it. I was told it was an orchid cactus. Now, mm-hmm. did you ever hear of that?
Oh, absolutely, and we do grow them. The genus is Epiphyllum, and it gets its common name orchid cactus because it is an epiphytic type of plant in nature, meaning that its epiphytes grow on other plants, mainly growing on trees.
Oh.
Most cacti are terrestrial or growing in the ground.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it gets its common name orchid cactus because it is an epiphyte. It has no other relation to the orchid family at all.
Okay.
But they really are fun to grow. We have, oh my gosh, I think about 8 or 10 different colors of epiphyllum.
Really?
Yeah, we propagate those. Like you say, you just cut slips of it and put them in a pot and, you know, bingo, a couple years you've got blooming size plants of it, and they're just huge dinner plate sized flowers. You know,
they're gorgeous.
Yeah, they don't last all that long, but once you get a fairly mature plant established, you get dozens and dozens of these flowers on there, and they typically bloom in May, June.
Well, I've had them, as soon as it's done blooming in the spring, I bring it outside, you know, when it's warm enough.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I had more blooms in the fall.
Oh, did you?
Oh, okay. My goodness.
That's awesome. There are some varieties that will do that, but you really, what color is yours?
It's a pink.
Okay.
It's a gorgeous fuchsia pink.
Good. Keep that plant around and make sure you give it to some, you know, your family members and just keep that around. That's a good one. These plants become heirlooms, I'm telling you.
Really? Well, mm-hmm. It certainly is. And, so it's really not an orchid. It is a cactus?
Correct. It's typically in the cactus family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've really neglected the poor thing, and it does beautifully.
Oh, that's the ticket.
Okay.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Ruth likes to ignore her.
I can't preach that enough, you know.
Eric in Sussex, thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. We have a couple of Phalaenopsis here, and they seem to be doing good. But recently I bought a D-Impact Red for my wife. It was at one of those big box stores, and it looked beautiful. And after it was done blooming, it dropped its leaves. But it's long and gangly.
Okay.
And
we
ended up taking some cuttings off of it, and now and put those in another pot, and there are like 3 new sprouts coming off of this cutting,
mm-hmm.
and it has resprouted from the original cutting.
Mm-hmm.
The tips on all the leaves are browning back a little bit,
mm-hmm.
And it's not sending out any new flower stalks. And mm-hmm. I am trying to understand, too much light, not enough light, too much water, the wrong bedtime story. What do I need?
What is it? Yeah.
Well, what you got there, it sounds like, is dendrobium.
Okay.
That's what I can gather anyway. And addressing your leaf tip dieback, it's pretty common, really, to have leaf tip dieback on the dendrobium family of orchids. I wouldn't be too concerned about that unless it's really pronounced and it's consuming, you know, more than a third of the leaf, then you might have some issues, you know, other than, you know, the natural, but they do propagate like that. You're doing a good job. You're going to get new shoots coming out of that thing, either from the pot or new shoots coming off of the shoot that you have put in the pot. And either way, you know, you get new growth on that plant. And once the new growth has basically fully matured, which sometimes takes up to a year, then it will start to set its buds again. So be a little patient with that. Grow it on like you're doing, you know, give it lots of light. Temperature wise, they don't mind anything like the Phalaenopsis either. Anything between 60 and 80, throw it outside in the shade for the summer. They'll go wild with that. Fertilize it once a month, bring it in the fall, give it a nice bright window again. You should get some flowers on that. Typically, you know, in the winter, spring, from what I know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, doing a good job. Thanks for calling.
And Liz in Viroqua. Hello, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. I just want to remind everyone that we have native orchid species growing in the wild here in Wisconsin. In my case, I'm lucky enough to have showy orchids in my woods.
Absolutely.
It's illegal to dig them up, but if you find them, some orchids are terrestrial, which mm-hmm. these all are.
Right.
And things like lady slippers, and in my case, the showy orchids. So people could learn what they look like, and if they see something in the woods, just take a nice little picture of it and admire it.
Oh, absolutely. Gosh, that is such a great call, Liz. Thank you so much. You know, there are 46, I believe, naturally occurring species of orchids in Wisconsin alone, and the pink lady slipper is actually the Minnesota state flower, so they've really got it going on there. But yes, we have the pink lady slippers, the showy orchids, we have the yellow lady slippers. As a matter of fact, a lot of our customers have these slipper orchids growing in their yards and so on, and highly enjoyable plants. They're kind of like a perennial. They'll go dormant and come back in the spring and show their beautiful flower. Someone's got a picture of up on your Facebook page there of one of the native slipper orchids as well here, I see. So, yeah, great. Great call.
Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call, Joe. We have some emails as well. One from Meg, excuse me. Great show. I have Frag Paul Eugene Conroy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's one of the Phragmopediums, obviously, my passion there. And I actually more than likely bred that plant, Longifolium crossed with Wallisii, two Phragmopedium species. She's doing a good job.
Yeah, she says the pouch on the bloom appears dented or pinched.
Mm-hmm.
One of the sepals is bent. Do you know what causes that?
Well,
how to prevent that?
Yeah, the sepal being bent, kind of normal for that type of frag. It's got a very, very tall, narrow dorsal sepal to it, and very commonly they will bend over a little bit, lean themselves forward. It could be just a developmentary thing, and I'm pretty sure that's what happened with the pouch being dented, too. I often see that a lot more times in the summer than I do other times of the year, so obviously something to do with possibly the day length or the extra warm temperatures or something of the sort. Sometimes the plants just produce their flower structure, their material there, the cells just produce too fast and things don't come out right. You'll get, you know, weak points or distorted points and certain problems like that, not really problems, but certain anomalies like that. But, you know, she's getting it to bloom, and that particular Phragmopedium is one of those longer petaled types, really super striking and very easy to grow, too. Lots of light, keep them moist, super rewarding types of orchids to have.
Doug sent us an email, said, I had the common P. Cygnus legend for about 5 years. Flowers well, but for the last few years, the oldest leaf eventually develops either an insect or disease problem, starts on the edge of the leaf, turns it light green initially, then black. Eventually, the entire leaf is affected. The issue gets off and breaks down, and I have to cut it off.
Ew.
Plant stays ahead of this by developing a new leaf for everyone it loses, but I know this isn't good.
Yeah. You know, it's possible that plant could be either virused. There are certain viruses, you know, that float around in the orchid family, and therefore it's always recommended to sterilize your cutting tools between your orchid plants when you are, you know, cutting off dead flowers or anything like that. So it's possible that it is a virused plant, and they typically behave like that, where they kind of just barely stay ahead of that game there. The virus doesn't actually ever kill the plants, but it does weaken them to the point where they have issues like that. You know, if he does have other orchids there, he's probably going to want to make sure that he's sterilizing his tools between cutting things. But once they get the virus, there's no cure for that. Just keep it isolated and, you know, try to nurture it along and keep it going. Repot it. Try to keep it happy.
There we go. And then we have, by the way, you can join in. We have open lines, though, so we'll get you on pretty quickly. So give us a call with your question or comments as we talk orchids with Chuck Aker. The number 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show or email us. And we have an email from Paul. Given that orchids have so many special requirements to propagate in vitro, such as sterile nutrient agar, and so much time, how do they propagate in nature?
Oh, that is just such an awesome question, you know, and we can talk about the propagation and development of orchids for hours, but that is an awesome question. When the seed pod in nature actually becomes mature, it it basically just cracks open, and the seed of most orchids is very much like dust, and it's just very, very small. In most cases, it's barely visible to the naked eye. So this seed kind of floats around and disperses itself in a pretty widespread area, actually. However, the only seed that is going to really germinate in nature is going to be the seed that deposits itself close to the mother plant itself. And the mother plant is actually producing a symbiotic fungi right at its root zone, right at the surface of where the roots are, in the ground level or up in the tree, wherever it may be growing. The symbiotic beneficial fungi is there, which helps that seed embryo to develop in nature. And it's a very, very low germination rate there, and that is why the orchid seed has literally thousands to millions of seeds in these capsules. You know, very few of these plants will actually end up germinating in most cases in nature, but you know, that's how it's done. And you can do that sometimes in captivity too with your pod of orchids. If you ever want to create a seed pod by pollinating your flower and it becomes mature, let it crack open and take the seed and dust it around the surface of the pot and just sit back. It'd take about a year for it to actually germinate. And, you know, we've done that at the greenhouse numerous times. It's a very slow process and you only get a few plants, but it's kind of fun. But great question.
And Phyllis in Boscobel has a question for you. Let's go to her. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I have, my daughter gave me a Phalaenopsis in the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
And it has had 18 flowers.
Oh, my.
Oh, boy.
It had two shoots, and I've only lost two flowers.
Oh, my goodness.
and here it is July.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
And
August.
Yeah. The hummingbirds even come to the window.
Oh, wow. Cool. Well, you got to get some pictures of that and get that up on Larry's Facebook page.
Yes.
Yeah. What I want to know is it's not showing any signs of starting new leaf,
mm-hmm,
and whatever. So
right.
Is there anything I need to do?
No, not necessarily. You know, let me ask you, is this a white Phalaenopsis?
No, it's a real dark purple.
Okay, all right. Well,
it's
good.
Beautiful.
Good. Yeah.
And all I seeded is ice cubes.
Yeah, well, you're doing awesome. You know, that's all it takes is just, you know, continue doing what you're doing. Let that thing end up flowering. And like I said to the caller earlier, when it is finally finished flowering and you're starting to lose those and you get your last flower falling off, cut that stem off, you know, quite high, cutting off only the section of the stem that actually had bore the flowers. And leaving the remaining portion of that stem on your plant, often they'll branch out of there and you'll start another bloom spike relatively quick there. So do that initially.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you get on the internet at all?
Yes.
You can see on our care instruction sheet posted on our website at orchidsgardencenter.com.
Okay.
And there's some great instructions there on how to culture that Phalaenopsis and how to cut that stem off and make it bloom again and stuff like that.
That's great.
Well, it has just been, I mean, a beautiful pleasure.
Yeah.
It has to have been.
I had cataract surgery, and this was her gift.
Oh.
She says, now you can enjoy the flowers.
Yeah.
And I've had orchids before,
mm-hmm,
and had relatively good luck with them, but mm-hmm, this one has just been outstanding.
Well, good. You're really doing well. Glad you're enjoying it. That's
Thank
what it's
you.
All about.
When should I fertilize it?
Well, like I stated earlier to a caller, you can fertilize pretty much all year long. You know, once a month is usually enough,
okay,
you know, whether it's blooming or not. And
okay,
if you haven't been fertilizing it, you know, maybe that's why it hasn't kicked into producing a new leaf yet. So,
okay,
you know, if you've got some plant food hanging around the house, like Miracle-Grow or something like that, mix yourself up a little bit of it. Don't make it too strong. You know, usually half of what they recommend on the package is great plenty.
Okay, and then just pour the water on there and...
Yeah, pour it right through the pot. Let it drain out good. Make sure it's not ever sitting in water or anything like that.
And, okay.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Chuck Aker with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Also has his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking orchids today with Chuck Aker from Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Thank you for listening in. If you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. Do you grow orchids? What varieties have you had some experiences with? Or maybe you don't grow at all but have questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call, email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page, post a question or a comment or a photo there. And Chuck, you brought some just absolutely gorgeous orchids today, and Frank and Judith took a photo, a picture, and it's posted up on our Facebook page.
All right.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
I've got it here somewhere. I'll find it. But anyway, oh, I think I'll probably have to hit refresh. That's probably what I need to do to get your shot up here. Anyway, tell us what you brought.
Well, I had brought in two examples of some miniature-type Cattleya orchids. And the Cattleya, commonly known as the corsage flower from, you know, back in the 50s and 60s and early 70s,
yeah.
You know, typically those big flowers, you know, 8-9 inches across, and
yep.
You know, the plants are ginormous, you know, usually growing in a 7 or 8 inch pot. They stand, you know, a couple of feet tall in some cases, you know, take up a lot of space. And you know, the Cattleya just being such an amazing flower for fragrance, color, and just the production of the flower, how it comes up out of the pseudobulb and the leaves and so on. They're just such colorful
types.
Now, yeah, the hybridizers, you know, and we're just, everybody's trying to make things smaller so we can get more of them on our windowsill. And that's what's happening here. So, and often these new hybrids will bloom, you know, multiple times a year too, where back in the day, most Cattleyas, you know, pretty much were all just annual blooming season. So, you know, these plants, too, will bring a lot of value. Some of these little guys will retail for, you know, $10, $12, $15. And, you know, they bloom 2-3 times a year. And the cute little red one we have here. And
boy, that's a pretty one.
Yeah, a little bicolor yellow with red splash petal. This is really an interesting variety, too. And, you know, they have a little sweet fragrance to them. They don't overpower room or anything like that. But, you know, they do have the aroma, which is another attribute for that family of plants. Whereas, you know, like the Phalaenopsis being a beautiful orchid and easy to grow, unfortunately, is not aromatic. But, you know, there certainly is a whole host of orchids out there that are fragrant. And, you know, these miniatures are just becoming more and more popular in the orchid family. And all the hybridizers are scrambling to try to miniaturize so many different types of genera of orchids. And I know the last time that I was on, I came in with some miniature Phalaenopsis,
yeah.
And they're truly small. I mean, they're just little 2-inch pots, and the things only stand, you know, 4 inches tall off the table, and incredibly popular plants. We go through dozens and dozens of those things.
Very cool. Well, Gary in Brookfield has a question for you. Gary, hi.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm having a problem with the orchid that we've been blooming for the second time that it's bloomed, but we're still having problems with the spider mites and maybe white flies.
Okay.
You know, you get the little dusty, pinpointed, fuzzy specks, and I think those are spider mites, but how do you control them?
Well, yeah. What type of orchid do you have there?
To tell you the truth, I do not know, but it's like a little 2-inch orchid from Home Depot. I got it.
Okay.
Been blooming for about over a year and a half.
Yeah, all right.
Multiple.
All right. Well, one of the first things I would recommend for the common insects like this is the insecticidal soap, which is basically what it is. It's a soap water solution. Now, you can make your own with your dishwashing detergent and water, Ivory dishwashing detergent, you know, 4 or 5 drops into a little mister bottle, and then spray those undersides of the leaves, you know, the surface of the leaves as well. Try to spray some into the pot so you can, you know, control that. The insecticidal soap sold on the market is a little bit stronger, and it doesn't have a fragrance to it. Sometimes some of the orchids are sensitive to the fragrance that's put into these, you know, commercial household soaps. But it's super low toxicity. You know, there's no chemical there. You can practically drink this stuff. So if you're, you know, have children and pets and so on, it's really one of the best things to use. And it's quite effective. However, You have to reapply it quite diligently and usually every 3 to 5 days to stay ahead of those insects because, again, it's not real toxic, potent chemical. It just needs to be reapplied, and you need to get the bug wet. So be real thorough with your spraying.
There you go.
All right. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Jerome in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Absolutely. I was just curious what your guest thought of the movie adaptation and the book The Orchid Thief, which it's loosely based on. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Oh, that's a great call. Yeah, that was a good book. I had read the book and, of course, seen the movie, too. You know, and that's how passionate people are with collecting orchids. And they were actually, you know, down in the Frackahatchee Swamp, I believe, collecting the ghost orchid and seeking the ghost orchid for what they thought were medicinal purposes and so on. So, I mean, there's some facts to that movie and book and some not. But I'll tell you, that's how passionate people get with some of this stuff. And just recently, I think 2 years ago, they discovered one of the largest ghost orchids in the Frackahatchee Swamp, and it got to the point where they had to have, 24-hour guard in the swamp by this tree where this plant was found just to keep the poachers, you know, from coming in and taking it. So it really is. It's crazy. And, you know, we kind of dealt with a little bit of that in the collection process of the Phragmopedium kovacii that I was involved with in Peru.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and there's actually a book written on that as well. And I wouldn't be surprised someday if a movie comes out in that because there was a lot of players involved with that situation. And, Selby Botanical Gardens was involved. Many high-level plant taxonomists in the orchid world, all around the world, were involved with this. And if the book just came out not too long ago, and I am actually in it, which is kind of exciting. Yeah. So
What's the name of the book?
Well, the book is called The Scent of Scandal. And it's put out, I believe, by Timber Press. I don't have that information in front of me. The gentleman that wrote it is actually a writer for, I believe, the Sarasota Times down in Florida. So he was right there in the thick of everything with Selby Botanical Gardens being in Sarasota. So he was way abreast of all the situations going on. And, you know, there was years of things going on, much like, you know, with the book adaptation and the movie. It's just, you know, the people involved with it just get so passionate, and sometimes they do the wrong thing. And
so who's going to play you in the movie?
Yeah, well, maybe I could do that myself. That would be great.
That would be, Judith's going to get a copy of that book for us.
And yeah.
Maybe we'll have that author on the air.
Yeah. I got a signed copy of it, which is really exciting. And, he was grateful to have my information because how he put it, I gave the book a happy ending. So, you know, that was really cool.
Given that orchids have so many I'm talking about orchids now flowering itself to death. Can an orchid flower itself to death if it keeps throwing new flowers and shoots, but no new leaves?
Yeah, you know, and I've seen that happen. There's some customers that have bring some things in, you know, like the last caller there, the lady with the orchid blooming for, you know, 7-8 months and hasn't made a new leaf. I have seen that numerous times where the plant just gives it all, you know, and that's its last hurrah. And, you know, when it finishes flowering, it just totally expires. It's not all that common, you know, and it does happen, though. And if someone is really concerned about that, I know this sounds harsh, but you need to sacrifice those flower stems and just, you know, cut the thing off and, you know, stop it from flowering and put a little energy back into the growth for a while. And, you know, it'll reward you again with a nice bounty of blooms. But there are those cases where those plants just give it all and that's the end. So, unfortunately.
How did you get interested in orchids?
Well, I was actually blessed and grew up with my parents growing orchids as a business that they had started. And actually, prior to them starting it, it was a doctor's hobby here in Madison. So the history of our orchid business here in Madison actually dates way back to the 1930s, where there was a prominent Madison area doctor called Clarence Schubert. and he was raising some orchids on his little estate on the north shore of Lake Mendota. He's raising a little collection of orchids for a hobby, and one thing led to another. He needed some help, and he summoned my father, who was a teenager at that time. Then my uncle, my father's brother, came over to his place, and they're helping him do this orchid growing and repotting, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden he's got a business going.
Wow.
Then they ran out of space over there on the facility on the north shore of Lake Mendota, so they came over by my grandpa and bought 20 acres of my grandpa's farmland and started erecting the facility that we currently have. That was in 1948. I was born in 59, so I was born right into the business and, you know, running around in the greenhouse at the, you know, ripe old age of five and stuff and driving my parents crazy, I'm sure. But, I started in at an early age, you know, but it did take a while. It took some years for me to really...
And you got some education on it, too.
Boy, I tell you, you know, and through all the other commercial growers that are in the area and a lot of consulting and just, you know, hands-on, you know, try it, see if it works. And if it doesn't, try something different. So it was the school of hard knocks, you know. And but it was fun. It's really a passion. It's a lifelong thing for me, you know. It's not really a job for me. It's a way of life. It's what I do.
So, and probably be doing it for a long time to come.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, if things go the way it's heading, we have a real big orchid following in this area with the Orchid Club in Madison. It's really huge, really huge. We're really thankful for that.
Chuck Aker is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Also propagates and sells orchids through his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Orchids bring a beautiful flair to a home or an office, and the blooms are wonderfully long-lasting. But there's some work that goes into that plant being ready to purchase and to flower. Once you have it, though, it can be a fairly easy plant to raise and keep blooming. Chuck Aker of Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, our guest. He also has his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. Great to have him with us today. Certainly, if you have questions for him about orchids, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question or an orchid photo. We'd love that, too, on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you, see what you've got. And, you know, John in Eagle River has been waiting quite a while. So let's just go right to John, Chuck, and see what's on his mind. Right. Hi, John.
Hello. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Very interesting program. In the end of the last century, I had a restaurant and bar in central Mexico. And we went in to decorate the bar. We went and collected orchids in the Sierra Madre Occidental, which is the western edge of Mexico in the central part. And it was easy to find orchids that were attached to oak trees mm-hmm. that the loggers had just knocked over because they were going for the pine trees. And we could go down there and strip off orchids 500 plants at a time.
Right.
From these trees and then take them back and replant them, and it was impossible to kill them. I mean, yeah. they just lasted forever. And I wondered how many orchid species grow in the wild in Mexico, if you know, and then how many grow here in the U.S. or Canada?
Well, I think I can nail the Mexican species down to right around 4,000. I don't know how close I'd be. You know, it's right in there. It's right
in
there.
I've heard that the number of 2,000, but 4,000 makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a lot. I'll tell you, we've got quite a few of them at the nursery that are native to Mexico. And, you know, in amongst one genus, it's not uncommon to have several hundred species. So, you know, as far as in North America, you know, I really don't know because we don't deal a lot with the native North American orchids at all. Our stock is mainly the tropical material, you know, from Central America, South America, Asia, things like that. So I know there's 46 species in Wisconsin, and that's about as far as I can go with that one.
All right.
Wow.
Thanks, John.
Interesting. Wonderful.
Hey,
they're
thanks.
They're a great plant.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it. And Miranda in Superior, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about vanilla.
Oh,
I just heard that you brought a plant in, and I wish I were somewhere where I could take a look at it. But.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the vanilla orchid, and not a lot of people know that vanilla, our wonderful flavoring, is actually an orchid. It comes from an orchid. And the vanilla is grown as a vine. It actually resembles that of more of a Hoya, really, than anything. So it's a vining type of orchid plant, and it grows somewhat terrestrially, meaning that it's in the ground, and somewhat epiphytically, meaning that it will grow up on something. We have them growing in pots, and they're set up on a little trellis or a little bamboo stake, so you can water them at the pot, and you can spray the leaves up above and watch the roots attach themselves to the bamboo trellis and stuff like that. To flower a vanilla in our climate here takes a little doing. The plants that we sell have about 2 to 3 feet of vine on them now. And to flower one, it'll take upwardly to 15 or 20 feet of vine. So simply you just want to grow them warm, grow them bright, fertilize them adequately, and they will just continue to grow that vine and grow that vine until it reaches maturity, and then it produces its flower. Once you see the flower cluster there, the flowers open, and here is why vanilla is so expensive. When the flower opens, it lasts only 12 hours. So in the vine groves where vanilla is produced commercially, workers go in early in the morning and hand pollinate the freshly opened flower on all these vines, because by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that flower is expired and subsequently would be rendered inadequately pollinated. So that's one of the reasons why vanilla is so expensive. And then it goes on to kind of the same thing as how orchids propagate from seed. It does take months for that fruit, as you would call it, on that pollinated flower to actually develop into a ripe enough stage for it to be harvested and then sent off to be processed. And the whole vanilla bean processing is something I'm not versed at all. But again, that takes, it's just a whole nother gambit there. So now you know why vanilla is so expensive. We have
it's a pretty plant, though. I mean,
And they're easy to grow, actually, too. They make a great house plant, so you can get it going, you know, whether it flowers or not. It's kind of just fun to have around, you know, a great conversation piece. We have a mature plant established at the greenhouse on the wall. It crawls up and down on the glass of the greenhouse inside. And Olbrich Gardens has an amazing specimen in the conservatory here in Madison. John Wirth does an amazing job with cultivating that plant. It goes straight up one of his tropical trees in there. And, you know, it's got big, huge leaves on it. And it blooms every spring. If you want to see vanilla bloom, you know, you've got to go in there and see it. So, yeah, really a fun plant to grow. We've got two varieties, a variegated leaf and a solid green-leafed type. And really just a hoot to have around.
There you go. Thank you so much, Miranda, for calling. And Julia in Excelsior. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My orchid is the common one that you've been mentioning.
The Phalaenopsis.
Correct.
Yes.
And I did print out your sheet, but my issue is there are two stems off it, and one stem is turning kind of light green and yellow, and all the flowers are dropping off of that stem.
Okay.
The other stem is still green and strong and has its flowers.
Okay. And how long has that stem that's expiring been blooming?
Probably a couple months.
Okay. I think what you have there, again, is the natural expiration of the flowers. And sometimes when you have a two-stemmed flower like that, you'll have the one stem go expire before the other stem, simply because it actually, more than likely, started the flower before the other one. That's what I think you got there. So you just have nothing other than the natural expiration of the blooms on there. And I would recommend cutting that stem back. just like our care sheet states, just cutting off the only the section that actually bore the flowers to get that lower section then to shoot out another bloom spike for you. If you wait too long to cut it, often the stem has lost its viability, and if it is starting to turn yellow and so on already, it may not be viable enough to actually cut back and force another bloom spike out of. So, you know, don't despair. Just cut it off completely then, and the plant will eventually produce another bloom spike when it's all finished flowering on the other side, too. So
there you go.
You're doing good.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.
Mike in Prairie du Sac. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, I have a question for you. We have to repot a couple of orchids, and I went and bought a couple of bags of wood chips, hickory chips. Can you use those in place of bark?
Well, I personally wouldn't. There is some specifics to the bark that's used in the orchid industry, and it's mainly more of a pine bark. You know, Douglas firs and other white pines, sequoia and redwood was used, you know, years ago when they were prevalently logged, but now it's mainly Douglas fir and so on. I don't think I would recommend that because that bark often will release some types of tannins and things like that. It's not really conducive for orchid growing, and the tannins can sometimes be toxic, kind of like the walnut tree can be toxic to certain plants around it. So I really wouldn't do that. You know, common orchid mix is easily obtainable. If you need some shipped to you, or, you know, drop down by us and pick up a bag, I wouldn't jeopardize my plant for that.
Well, we haven't been over your way for quite a while now, but we have been to your place before.
And oh, good.
It's worth the trip. So.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, and if you can't make it down, we can certainly mail you a small bag of bark, too. You know, that's not a problem.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, by the way. We have open lines again, finally, and we can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And Ronald in Fort Atkinson. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes. I've got about 7 orchid plants, and they were pretty traumatic. I had them repotted, and I repotted some of them myself. They're all potted in plastic with a clay pot on the outside of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got one here blooming, and it's got a bloom that's going backwards.
Okay.
So I got one single orchid right at this time. And, you know, I'm wondering what I'm doing wrong in my watering or repotting that should be expecting blooms at this time of the year?
No, not so much this time of the year. This now is more of a growing season during the summer months, so you'll be expecting to see some leaf production on those plants, you know, generating a new leaf out the center and having that mature by, you know, the early fall, end of fall or so. And then as the climate cools from the summer's heat, that is actually what stimulates the flower spike to emerge from those plants. And if you don't actually experience enough cooling of the night in your home, you may not get the flower spike, and subsequently you should move your plant to a room that's a little bit cooler at night. And some people will even go to the garage or you know, an unheated foyer or something like that, where the plant can experience about a 55-degree temperature at night for about 4 to 6 weeks. And typically in October or November is a good time of the year to do that with the plants, and they will shoot their bloom spikes out.
October or November.
Pardon me?
Yes.
October or November.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Early fall like that, and the bloom spikes should come out at that time. And subsequently, you'll get flowers right after the first of the year or February, and that's normal bloom season then.
There you go.
Yeah. Right now, I've got them on the three-season porch.
Good. That's good for
them. We were gone for over 2 weeks. Had the neighbors come over and water them once.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I keep a plastic dish under the pot,
mm-hmm.
and I run water through that until maybe I have a quarter inch in the
in the dish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my method of watering.
Okay. Well, make sure that you don't let those pots sit in water, though. So make sure you drain that water out so the pot isn't going to be soaking up that water.
Put some stones or something in them?
Yes, definitely. Or an inverted saucer or something in there to lift that pot up off of that water. If you let it sit in water too often, repetitiously, you're going to rot the roots, and then your plant is going to be very unhappy.
For sure. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Here's Marilyn sent a picture of my epidendrum orchid.
Oh, is that pretty?
Is that pretty?
That's got a fiery color to it.
love that photo, and there's some other ones up as well. You should go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you want to see some really beautiful flowers, because there are a lot of good ones up on the Facebook page right now. You work at Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, and you also propagate and sell your own orchids through your own business, Flask by Chuck Aker. Chuck,
right?
What's available through both of those?
Well, the business, the nursery, we have, oh my gosh, literally, you know, thousands of different types of orchids for sale. What I specialize in personally in my own business is propagating the Phragmopedium orchid, and it's mainly for commercial growers to stock. They're actually going to be buying these plants from me in the flask generally. Mm-hmm. So I will be producing and hybridizing these new hybrids of Phragmopediums. I'm kind of known in the country as being the frag man. Mm-hmm. There's plants that I have that are really unique to the Phragmopedium genera, basically, and are unique to our business and my personal collection. So I'm able to produce some pretty interesting things like that. It started out kind of as a little hobby for me and has branched out into a small business, you know, basically. And I really enjoy it. It has brought me great pleasure to meet a lot of these commercial orchid growers and a lot of these real active, avid hobbyists that are out there. You know, with the internet, being able to sell things like that, you just get everyone involved. And it's just really, really great. I enjoy it immensely. And the Phragmopedium is definitely my passion. We have interesting Phragmopediums on the bench right now that should start to flower this coming winter, some new hybrids, never before seen. So it's always interesting to see some of the new stuff bloom, to see where the breeding program is going. Sometimes it's a bust, you know. Sometimes the thing doesn't come out quite like I wanted it to. You know, you spend 3-4 years doing this and growing it, and it's like, oops, that's not something I really want to sell. But some people like that too, you know. They'll look at that and go, wow, that's great. So I guess it's all in the eye of the beholder too.
Do you have pests? Well, what about the pests and diseases that orchids, yours and others, that are especially vulnerable to?
Yeah, you know, orchids are going to be susceptible to those common insects that most houseplants can get as well. Most prevalently, we deal with the spider mite, as the caller previously had, and also mealybug. And I think those two are really the two most common. And both are pretty easily eradicated, both in the home and in our greenhouse situation. And, you know, we have a pretty regimented preventative program at the greenhouse, and we keep good greenhouse hygiene as well. When we see something, we're on it right away, whether we have to isolate the plant and, you know, deal with it on an individual basis or start in on a whole crop, you know, to spray. But, you know, both of those are really easily managed. And for people at home, too, when you've got a collection together, whether it's orchids or houseplants, you know, you want to be able to diagnose that and isolate that situation right away before it spreads. It's more of an issue at home because there's no natural predator in your house to, you know, usually consume some of these insects. Whereas, you know, in the greenhouse during the summer, we have a little bit of natural predators going around to keep things at bay. It's more so in the winter when we're all closed up tight that we're going to get outbreaks of something like that. But I mean, it's really good to keep good hygiene, both, you know, in your collection as well as us for commercial growers. You know, pick up after yourself dead leaves and, you know, infected plants that have insect issues and so on. Get after it right away.
And, you know, at the center, at Orchids Garden Center and Nursery, which I've been to, you've got more than one greenhouse there. You've got a huge operation.
Yeah, we do, and we've just recently expanded our operation as well. We're running, about 25,000 square feet of orchids. Just in the middle of the summer here, we obtained the entire stock of an orchid grower that closed their doors after 60 years of being in business near the Chicago area. So we've more than doubled our stock in the last couple of months, and we're really going into, internet sales and more of the species orchid production, the naturally occurring types that are found in the wild. We're going to be really specializing in that, as well as continuing our normal hybrid production material, our big, show plants that you want to have in your house. But we're getting way into the mounted orchids, which are basically the orchid plant, growing on a slab of wood, mimicking how they would grow in nature and how they're grown in, as an epiphyte. Really an interesting way to cultivate the orchid. People really get interested in that. A lot of miniature material. Again, the miniatures are getting more popular all the time, so we really want to focus on that. So we really have a lot of stuff going on out there right now in the orchid world.
When you've got an orchid growing on bark like that, or growing on almost like a tree limb, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically what we use are small pieces of grapevine, which is kind of a rough coating to it. And then we have some rough cedar. We often will use cork slabs. Cork is getting a little bit more difficult to obtain and is somewhat expensive, so it does add to the value of the plant itself, but it has great longevity to it. It'll never rot out, so you can leave your orchid mounted on it for years and years and years. So various things you can use for mounting, as long as it's got somewhat of a rough surface to it, because the orchid root likes to adhere itself to something that is a little bit more coarse like that versus some smooth piece of wood. So you really just can't go get a 2x4 and, mount an orchid to it. In the right climate, you probably could.
Yeah, probably could in Trinidad. I'm pretty sure of that.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, a lot of listeners, callers today mentioned ice cubes, and I didn't never followed up on that, but with the watering program, is that a typical kind of way to water?
Well, it's been advocated by a certain company that's propagating Phalaenopsis orchids and selling on the mass market to the big boxes.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of that out there in the market, of course. The Home Depots and so on are selling these plants. We personally do not advocate that method of watering, for our orchids, for any orchid really. But you know what? It's working, and my hat's off to that company that develops that. The customers seem to be very happy with that. Watering an orchid is probably the biggest struggle a lot of people have, when to water, how much. So I think, they've simplified that, if that's the right way to put it. And the plants seem to be doing good. So,
and if you're not using ice cubes, you use glass or a...
You'd want to take the plant to the sink usually and give it a good thorough watering so it's flushing out the bottom of the pot if it's growing in bark. If it's in a moss mix, you simply just come to the plant with a half a cup of water and pour it in there and let it soak up. And, either way, it's just the main thing with doing this is make sure that the plant is not overwatered. And that's, again, where the real struggle, I think, that people have, because us as a human, we like to nurture, and sometimes we over-nurture our plants by over-watering and over-caring for them, and I think that's the orchid's worst enemy, is the over-watering, for sure.
Chuck, I want to thank you so much. Chuck here has been nurturing how many thousands of orchids? 20,000?
Well, or more? There's at least that right now. At least.
He's got some dark spots under his eyes. He's been working night and day with these new orchids that come in. But thank you so much for being with us today. It's a real pleasure, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Absolutely, Larry. It's a pleasure to be on with you and your listeners. Thank you.
Chuck Orchid is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. We have his website, that website up on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. I think we also have his own business, Flask by Chuck Aker, up there as well. And great fun talking with him. Thank you so much for listening in. Just to let you know, at 11 on Monday, Peter Green of Infostar.com is here to talk about how to safely and effectively back up our data. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.